Nikki Jai, Scotty Father, Jada, Sita Bahuba, Jada, Sita Burida, Sakur Ki, Prince of the Host, Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu, Nitya, Nanda, Sri Adhidhidhidhara, Srivas, Adi, Sri Gaura, Bhakta, Nikki Jai, Kama Veda, Bhakta, Nikki Jai, Gaura, Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the lotus feet of Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Energy. This morning, text number 23.
Yad yad karishyati vihita gunavatara
yad yad karishyati
sufficiente.
Cada silenzio allegra ogni danza del pensiero.
Yunjita karma shamalam suyata jayam.
Yunjita karma shamalam suyata jayam.
Isha prapanna padadora mayatma shatya.
Isha prapanna padadora mayatma shatya.
Yad karishati vedita gunavatara.
Yad karishati vedita gunavatara.
Pavitramakritam sajatopi ceto.
Tasmin pavitramakritam sajatopi ceto.
Yunjita karma samalam sayata vijayam.
Yunjita karma samalam sayata vijayam.
Ladies? Ladies, that's it? Anybody?
Yes,
yes. Yeah, move. That's it. This, of course, is Lord Brahma speaking, praying for his creative abilities. Something happens with his microphone. You can
get really close here. Okay, how's that?
Okay.
Lord Brahma praying for creative energy. He says, the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, is always the benefactor of the surrendered souls. His activities are always enacted through his internal potency, the Rama, or the goddess of fortune. I pray only to engage in his service in the creation of the material world, and I pray that I not be materially affected by my works, for thus I may be able to give up the false prestige of being the creator.
Srila Prabhupada's report.
In the matter of material creation, maintenance, and destruction, there are three incarnations of the material modes of nature, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara. But the Lord's incarnation as Vishnu in his internal potency is the supreme energy for the total activities. Brahma, who is only an assistant in the modes of creation, wanted to remain in his actual position as an instrument of the Lord, instead of becoming puffed up by the false prestige of thinking himself the creator. That is the way of becoming dear to the Supreme Lord and receiving his benedictions. Foolish men want to take credit for all creations made by themselves, made by them. But intelligent persons know very well that not a blade of grass can move without the will of the Lord. Therefore, all the credit for wonderful creations must go to him. By spiritual consciousness only can one be free from the contamination of material affection and receive the benedictions offered by the Lord. Maam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namaste Namaste Sarasate Deve Aude Vari Pacharane Nirvishesha Sunya Vari Paschasa Deva Karane Oma Jnana Simmaram Dasya Kananjala Salakaya Chakur Miritam Jainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Panchakalpa Trivyascha Kripa Sunya Deva Jatikaram Bhavaya Vaishnavi Namaha. So as was also being discussed yesterday, the Makhana Maharaj, these prayers are mainly about humility. Especially Lord Brahma has a big position, big management job. Pretty big position, creator of the universe. And so in order to, he wants to do this big work, but he wants to always remain the servant of the Lord and never forget his actual position and become proud of his achievements, his position, his accomplishments. He's not at the top. Sarvamuni originally thought that his father Brahma was the highest thing. But then you can see that Lord Brahma was also meditating and praying, so I could understand that there must be something higher than me. When he said about Brahma, you have this whole universe in your grip, just like a walnut in the palm of your hand. You're so great. What can be greater than you? And Brahma said, very good question, let me tell you about Krishna. So he acknowledges his superior, his greater. And this is the secret. It is interesting here in this verse that he addresses particularly the Lord as Ramayatma Shaktya. He is engaged in his internal potency with Rama. And in this way he acts. He acts like this. So this is interesting because usually we think that the material creation happens to the agency of Durga. But here specifically, Rama, the internal potency, is mentioned on this account. So this is because Brahma does not want to become under the control of Durga. He is an external Kaiva Yashudanati Bharti Durga. He's like the shadow of Brahma, the internal person. And we're having a
that's for you.
Friday going on to shield the speaker and others from the sun. We should have done this before. Yes.
They've done.
Finished.
Good.
Good. Prabhupada remarked somewhere that the Lord never consorts intimately with his external potency. He is only intimate with his internal potency. So Prabhupada says he only consorts, never consorts intimately with the external potency, but when he does, he's Lord Shiva. He takes on this other aspect. So then Lord Shiva takes charge of all those people who are under the control of Purim. But basically the whole thing is going on under the conditioned souls as such in the moment of ignorance, under the control of the external potency. Brahma does not have to come under the control of the external potency. He always wants to remain under the control of the Lord. Under the internal potency, Ramadevi. So we have to understand ourselves also to be devotees, to be servants of Krishna, like Lord Brahma, who is after all the originator of our Sampradaya. We are all special servants of Lord Brahma. Brahma created this world for a purpose. Krishna's purpose is for the material world, is to give all the conditioned souls a chance to come out. So Brahma, Prabhupada remarks in the second canto, was not content just to create the world, but he also created his own party for reclaiming the conditioned souls, the Brahma Sampradaya, which Prabhupada said is active to this day. So we are all part of Brahma's scheme for his party, for fulfilling the purpose of creation. So like Brahma, we have to also remain under the control of the internal potency and not to fall under the control of the external potency. That's the way it goes. See, we can be, we are always controlled by Krishna. We do not have the choice not to be controlled by Krishna. As soon as we are in the illusion that we are not controlled by Krishna, then we are controlled by Guru Devi, by the external potency. And then we see, I'm doing it all by myself. What a great guy I am. We acquire our false ego. We don't know that we are controlled. But of course, we always are. And if you think you're very big, the moment of revelation or truth comes, everybody, at least at the time of death, will bow down and surrender to the material nature. However big, our position is naturally humble. Our position is naturally humble. The false ego is an artificial imposition on our natural humbleness. Our pride, our whole God game, God project in the material world, it's all nonsense. It's all bluff. And the bluff is revealed at the time of death, if not sooner, to everybody. So we should always remember this, that we are here. In the material world, if we're conditioned, we're under the control of the Rupa Devi, that lady, or under the control of the goddess of fortune, under the control of the internal potency of the nation of the Radharani. We can choose to be controlled by her. But we do not have the freedom not to be controlled by Krishna. Our limited freedom is how we want to be controlled. How we want to be controlled, this way or that way. As a devotee goes, I am always under Krishna's control. So, Brahma has not forgiven us. He is acting as the agent of Krishna. He says, Brahma, who was only an assistant in the moment of creation, wanted to remain in this act. actual position as an instrument of the Lord instead of being puffed up by the false speech of thinking self creation. So, Prabhupada remarks also that foolish men want to take credit for all creation made by them. See what I've done. They have very hard time being humble. I once was in the company of a Nobel Prize winner, and he had achieved the highest glory in science, winning the Nobel Prize. And I was standing next to him, and some admirers were coming up to him. And I watched him trying to be humble. But he couldn't. You could see, because he's eating it up. He was trying very hard to get himself in this artificial, unnatural position, because he's a great scientist. He made a discovery that helped the millions of people. And somehow or other, he knew this. It doesn't look good, but he's proud of it. So. Oh, shucks, it was nothing. But it was not convincing. Because he thought he did it. He didn't know about Mahanava, but Krishna did. He was the instrument. So the devotee always thinks like this. Here we're sitting in this body. And first of all, this body is really amazing. I think it does so many wonderful things. I take food, I put it in my mouth, it goes in my stomach, it gets digested. And if somebody says to me, Mom, that's why I have to do that. I don't know. I want to pick up my hand and wiggle my fingers. How did I do that? I have no idea. I just wanted to do it, and it does it. Because the truth of the matter is, I have to do it. Super soul sitting in my heart, doing it for me. All the time, the body is provided by the super soul, and it works and does things. And every one of us, or almost every one of us, has some skill or ability at which we are excellent. The nature of the human beings is that usually we're only excellent in a few things. You may notice this, that you see somebody, they sit down and they do, say, mathematics or logic or something like that. And then you're amazed at that. It's just that this incredible talent to do mathematics. And then you send them to meet somebody, agree to yes, and he's an idiot. Just one step to the left or the right of your talent, but he can go like a fool. So most of us are like that. We have one or two things that maybe we do really, really well. Musicians especially are like this. So they learn a skill really, really well. And otherwise, look at their lives, our musicians and artists. Oh, boy. Their arts are very good taste, but their lives, don't even think about it. But because we've been endowed by Krishna with a little ability, if I have some ability, if I sit down and do something, and suddenly it just works, you know, 5-year-old Mozart sits down at the piano, he's a genius. How did he do that? He doesn't know either. He just can do it. He just calls upon the skill and it's there. This is the way it happens. And you know, we call these people, we call them gifted. But we don't say gifted by whom? Where did the gift come from? And if you have a gift, shouldn't you be thankful? And ask what's it for? If somebody gave you this gift, shouldn't it be for something? Well, I knew a very gifted student in chemistry in college, and he used his brilliant gifts in science to get a PhD. and he's employed by the Revlon cosmetic company for manufacturing, for learning how to make lipstick and smear. That was what he did with his gift. Most gifts are. People have these gifts given by God, but they get taken over by the external focusing, and then nothing comes of it to benefit humanity, really. So we all have our gifts. They come from Krishna, and as devotees, we have to remember them. And if we engage them in Krishna service, remembering where it came from, actually, you will flourish in ways that are quite extraordinary. Krishna will keep giving it to us. Yoga Shema. I give them what they need and I keep it so they don't lose it. So, they don't need that. So the key is remaining in the internal focus. Always remember you are the servant. And for this we really have Prabhupada as an exemplary for us. One time Prabhupada was being praised by a gentleman from India. Prabhupada had, in such a short time, spread the Christian consciousness all over the world in an amazing way. And he was calling Srila Prabhupada a miracle worker. You've made a miracle. And Prabhupada says, no, I'm not. I haven't done anything miraculous. But I'm not a magician yet. And he was quiet for a bit, and he said, I said, only one thing is to my credit. He said, I have always remained the same. I have never tried to become the master. So he was willing to take his credit for being the servant. And anybody who knew Srila Prabhupada has some experience of it, he hit you in such a heavy way. You were in his presence, that he was a great person who was also a very simple man. He was genuinely humble. Because everything that happened around him, everything that proceeded from his activities, he didn't think it was him. He thought it was Pakistan, Sarasota, his mercy. Krishna was doing everything. And all he was doing was being a servant. And therefore he became wonderful. So spiritual life is just the opposite. Oh, by the way, let me just tell a little story. Before I ever spent much time with Srila Prabhupada, I used to see him in the New York airport. My city, Philadelphia, is an hour and a half drive from New York. Prabhupada would come to New York quite frequently. I'll drive out and meet him in the airport. Go to classes. And it was also fun when he left. The airport greetings were, when he came, was a big thing. He had hospitals and press conferences and all those things. When he left, it was a more subdued affair and more intimate, and those who knew liked him better. So one time, I was up there, and there was still a good crowd of devotees seeing Prabhupada off. This was a LaGuardia airport. And those were the days where there was no security speed up. So we all went up to the departure gate, and it was kind of a little old fence, and there were seats in there for the passengers to go on the plane. Prabhupada came in, he's kind of parked the seats in the row. And all the devotees came in and sat around with him, next to him. There was some talk going on. There was a good number of devotees besides the domestic flight from LaGuardia Airport. And it filled up. The whole departure area filled up. In fact, I couldn't get inside. I was just on the outside border. And Prabhupada was talking to people around and the laugh and the joking. Everybody was just concentrated trying to hear what was going on and everything. So I was sitting in the semi in the back, and then I noticed the airlines and the gate agents was a little upset because there were other passengers on the plane other than Prabhupada. They were starting to, they couldn't get in the gate area. So I saw him go up and try to, you know, the devotee to move away and the devotees rushed him away. And he came to me because I was standing back to you, do something. The other passengers have to get on. So I also tried to get somebody to move. Nobody would move. So I went to my GDC, Rupa Nuga. Rupa Nuga had this, what they call the military command presence. So got their attention. So I told him, I said, Rupa Nuga, look at the problem. People can't get in, but they're 30 or something. So he also tried to get somebody to move, and they just brushed him off too. So then there was a little low table between the chairs. So he jumped up, he stepped up on one of these tables, and put his hands around his mouth like this and shouted, "All devotees, leave the departure area. Please leave right away." And he shouted. And there was a sudden silence. And I saw his faces look at him, like all offended and everything. They're just paralyzed before anybody could move. Prabhupada got up. He was giving out this sort of mean look on his face. And he said, "That's usually the Prabhupada." I was just like, it was just incredible. You know, kind of like Rupa Nuga, he was the boss of the mountain. You know, he said, all the devotees, Prabhupada was just one of them. So you just you see this natural, spontaneous reaction with one of a very, very humble person. So he always remained the servant. That was his way of thinking, and therefore he could accomplish very great things. Now I've seen, I've also been there once when somebody came up to Prabhupada, the devotee I knew who was very proud. And he said to Prabhupada, "How can I become humble?" And he thinks that Prabhupada said, "Just like becoming humble, being humble." The tone of the question was like this: how can I, with all my abilities, my good looks, my talents, force myself in this unnatural and artificial position of becoming humble? It's, you know, it's just not right. It doesn't fit right. I think that's the predicament of many people. How can I become humble? Especially if you're an American. Driving the world, shaking the earth with your boots. Sometimes it's humiliating, but I'm sorry. So, it's the thing to realize is that it is not unnatural. It is actually our natural position. We are not God. We are constituted as the service of God. So, Prabhupada is asking to remain in his actual position. Even though he's the creator, what is his actual position? So it is necessary to be a devotee to become humble. We have the third verse of Shastra prayers. It says to Yadaki, that one should think of oneself like grass. Like grass. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out that if you consider the jiva, his actual size, and the number of jivas, the most appropriate body that expresses the real position of the jiva isn't that like grass. We have this human body, it's easy to predict this. But consider the jiva. The jiva is, according to the Upanishads, one tenth quarter of the next year, you get really, really excited.
And how many Jesus are there?
Well, you can't tell. Unlimited Jesus.
So just think of all the Jesus all together in their natural.
They resemble nothing so much as a lawn, an endless lawn of grass. As a Jew, he can't distinguish Brahma from the German. So that's actually the most appropriate body for us. We are, in fact, humble. But we have this false ego. We think it necessary to help ourselves up. Somehow or other, we have to maintain our prestige or self-esteem by this method of acquiring, exercising, pursuing false ego. It's all unnecessary. It's all unnecessary. Our faults, we have fallen away from Krishna. And Prabhupada remarks that the original sinful desire of the living entity is to become the Lord. He uses this term, original sinful desires, in second intro. Somehow or other, knowing what we do, we turn away from Krishna. Why? So we could start our own God project. We could try to become a competitor with Krishna. When we do that, since the position of the absolute truth of God is already taken, we cannot exactly fulfill that desire the way we would want. But he gives us this illusion. We reject our real identity, so he has to give us a false identity. That's what this matter is for. This is the place where you can, you know, forget Krishna. We have this false identity. In opposition to Krishna, our whole material body and material mind, unless we are an avatar, has been formed in opposition to Krishna. But as long as we're human beings, we can use it in another way, convert it to the service. So Krishna consciousness needs to re-establish our relationship with Krishna. There's two ways you can think of our condition in this material world. You take a religion class, a world religions class, they'll often describe this. The reason we need salvation is described in some traditions as ignorance of India, like the Mayavada Buddhism. It's just ignorance is somehow rather inexplicable, beginning with ignorance. And then the other way is something called sin. In the theistic traditions. We have no prescriptions, but ultimately Krishna consciousness, because we are theistic. The sin, the avidya is the consequence of the sin, the sinful will, the desire to become the Lord. The sin means there's a broken relationship with Krishna. If we find ourselves in material bodies as conditioned souls in this world, it's because we broke a relationship. It's not one of these, in the material world, when there's broken relationships, and you go to a counselor or a mediator, they usually try to tell you there's faults on both sides. Both parties are to blame. The marriage counselors do this. Each one thinks the other is entitled to blame, but the marriage counselors make it always clear. There's fault on both sides. When it comes to a broken relationship with Krishna, we have to come to the startling realization that Krishna is utterly blameless and that we are entirely at fault. He didn't do anything wrong, he has no bad qualities, and he has always wished us well. also on my side. So we have to repair this relationship as part of that process. Our original sinful desire and our mahashaya. This original sinful desire is embedded in the heart as karmashaya, the knot of the heart, the strong desire to enjoy in this world. So we have to really, to repair this relationship, we have to say to Krishna, please remove this. Please remove this. It's only by Krishna's mercy that it's removed. So we have to be sorry for this loss. We really have to want very badly to be reunited with Krishna. This verse, Trinadati Sunusanana, how do I become humble like that? You have to look at the previous version of Shastaka prayers. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where the prayers are recited by Chaitanya in the last chapter, Krishna's Kaviraj says that he tells Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mood when he recited, his feelings and emotions when he recited his prayers. So the one before, Nandamakari Mahaprabhu, Deepa Sarva Shakras, he lists, you have so many names, you put your potencies, all your potencies in them, you made it really easy to chant them. Bhagavad-gita, Bhagavan, that is your mercy. But in contrast to Bhagavad-gita, there is Mama Durdaiva, there is my misfortune. There is my misfortune, that in spite of all that, I'm still uninterested. I still have to, he's speaking like one of us, I still have to force my mind to concentrate on the whole thing. I'm always distracted by something in Krishna. This is my do-or-die. When Mahaprabhu chanted this verse, he said he felt two things. He shouted out the lamentation and humility. So that's really when we go through this process of clearing out the garbage from our hearts, the result is that we need lamentation and devotion. We say chant and be happy, and that's true, but also you have to chant and lament at the same time. We have to chant in this way. It requires some persistence. The thing is, to prove to Krishna we really want to come back. It is only by, I brought this with me, with one passage. I have to finish this up quickly. One passage in Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhajana Bhasha gives various verses as kind of a commentary on the Shastaka prayers. Well, once in a while he has his own remarks. And this is one of his own remarks in the second of these prayers. He says, one can easily progress by accepting the path given by the Mahajanas. One who acts according to his own ideas will meet with disturbance and worry. So we don't just chant the holy names, we follow the sadhana. Process. That process is you have to chant while dealing with offenses. Prabhupada described the process this way. Sadhana. To chant the holy name while trying to give up offenses while chanting on the clearing stage. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur continues, if one makes no effort to become free from anarthas, he will meet with misfortune, being unable to receive the mercy of the holy name. Without receiving the mercy of the name, one will be unable to remove his anartha despite repeated attempts. So notice, the anartha is not removed by us. They're removed by the mercy of the holy name. But we have to show the holy name that we are serious. We really want it removed. We can't chant and say, please remove my material desire, but not this one. Leave this one alone. Or please remove my material desires, but not just yet. Give me another 5 years. One really has to want them to be gone very badly. And here Bhakti Gautama has this incredible sentence that I'm thinking about the news. But if one cries sincerely at the lotus feet of the name, then within a few days all the garbage will vanish. After giving up an artist, one should fully engage in hearing the chant and taking the complete shell of the holy name. That's the next stage. Vishya. For it says, one cries sincerely at the lotus feet of the name, then within 2 days, all the artists will vanish. So, that crying sincerely is the necessary requirement for us to advance, to convince the holy name that we really want to come back to Krishna. We are not interested in material piety, the fruits of that. We are not interested in the fruits of gyan. We are only interested in pure devotional service. We want to be restored to that relationship. So this is how humility is actually formed, at least in our process, is given to us by we have great work to do. Brahma's creation is not supposed to go in vain. We are supposed to spread the blessing of his movement all over the world. We need to be empowered to do that. This is how we become empowered. We become like Prabhupada. Prabhupada's instructions were, you become just like me. He said in Africa in the early days, I am one person and see what I have done. He said, I act like a king because nobody can defeat me. He just defeated the secretary of the Minister Club. Then he was in Africa and he said, I act like a king because nobody can defeat me. And then he said, I am one person and see what I have done. Then he said, now we are 500, which I suppose was the number of his initiated devotees at the time. And they said, each one of you become just like me and see what will be accomplished. So that's his order. I've heard people say, we cannot be like Prabhupada, meaning we cannot be great. But the way to be like Prabhupada is not to try to become great, it's to become small, very, very small. It's to see that, just as in the material world, people are seeking out greatness for their advancement. Spiritual activity, we seek out humility for our advancement. And we begin on that journey. One thing we discover is that as humility increases, love of God increases. And just like love of God has no upper limit, humility has no lower limit. So it's never possible to think I'm humble because you can always see how much further there is to go. So one is relieved from that, the pride of being humble. So this is our journey, the journey into humility and all that is to great things. Thank you. Yes, Prabhu.
You mentioned at one point.
Is there a microphone?
I'm loud enough. You mentioned at one point that ignorance is a result of sin. At the beginning of the Nectar Devotion, they give the six benefits of bhakti. First, there's, I think, play shot in it. And it's described there that sin is a result of ignorance. And you expound on that now. You're referring to the original sin. One helps the other.
Yes, of course. As soon as we all notice that one sin leads to other sins. And one says ignorance, which means forgetfulness of Krishna. Then, he said that in our tradition, sin is the first thing and ignorance is the consequence. But he describes in a devotion to Shakti, the removal of suffering, describes sin as the consequence of ignorance. Of course, it's a circle. It's a circle. But the way Prabhupada describes it in the beginning of the second canto, I think it's the ninth chapter, he says, answered by reciting the Lord's version of the second one. He says that the first sinful will of the living entity is the desire to become the Lord. And the consequent will of the Lord is that the living entity shall forget his birth condition, so that the Lord was ignorant. Because he's answering Maharaj's scriptures, why are we here? So where did this ignorance come from? The ignorance came from Krishna. Krishna put us in this ignorance. Why? Because of our desire to become one with the Lord. So that's obviously the beginning. But on the other hand, you know, sin and ignorance are just two sides of the same coin. They're really, and the two events, so to speak, are simultaneous. That's my understanding. Yeah, they do. And then once you go, you have a, because of ignorance, you create more sins, and because of sins, you become more ignorant. You go on this downward spiral. Okay. Yes?
Yeah, you run.
I mean, this is what we mentioned, very important points about Samya. Immediately, then Lord Brahma, where at the beginning, he said to the Manga, Rasha Mongo, to mention that activities of power and therefore. So, he also made a remark that everything came because we are not chanting children. So my question is, how we can really go to the state of Nishtha, real humble, because we are humble with ups and downs for some time, but how we can be fixed in this belief and tolerance to get the message of Guru and Krishna.
So, you asked me the way that you and I can reply very briefly, where Krishna says, what he says, Abhyasa, by Abhyasa and by Radha. And Abhyasa practice. What does practice mean? Practice means repetition. Actually, the sense of Abhyasa has the root of repetition. So when you want to gain the skill to do something, you have to do it over and over again. So there's repetition. There are days of repetition is to want to become free from the narcissus. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur also remarks that the seed ground of all narcissus and offenses is to the tentacles, pramadaha, that insanity of forgetting Krishna. It was pramadaha, which is the ground in which all other offenses arise, and we cannot become free of all of them unless we are dealing with Krishna. In attentiveness. So Java is one of the best places to deal with it because it's simple arena. There's you, there's your mind, there's the holy name, and everything else is off to the side. And so we fix our mind on the holy name and we start chanting the Hare Krishna mantra with some attention. At least attention should be under our control. But then we discover, you know, 3-4 mantras, suddenly my mind goes off and something else. First thing, why does that happen? Guru Daya and Guru Sadhyas, I mean, that's my description. I should be able to be thinking Krishna always. What's wrong with me that my mind goes away from Krishna? Gets distracted by this stupidest thing. But when my mind goes away, I bring it back. When it goes away, I bring it back. This is a clearing state where I'm not offenseless, but I'm trying to become free from offense. This is, Prabhupada calls this almost offenseless. Because on that stage, the pure name is not manifest, but Manabhasa, the divine light of the holy name is manifest, and that destroys all sinful reactions. So just the effort, the abhyasa. Abhyasa yogi yuktena manasacheta kamejana, you know. And if you do that, vidyam purusham, you achieve the Supreme Lord by this abhyasa yoga. Also the 12th chapter is abhyasa, also appearance. So this is practice. The practice is that we are proving to Krishna that we are interested. This we are interested. But we focus our attention on the holy name. And actually, if you pay attention to the holy name, it becomes interesting. And the attention is under our control, then there will become feelings. So we just have to practice. And the other part is vairagya, vairagya. Because we cannot concentrate the mind if there's so much sense gratification. That will always pull our attention away from Krishna. So these two things. Arjuna said it's not possible. Krishna says yes it is. These two things, abhyasa and vairagya. Those are the right answers. We just have to apply it. Okay, we've gone over time now. Thank you very much, Prabhupada.